This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And it is such a true statement.
Yes, it is. We've always been kind of sideways in life.
Yeah, explains a lot, doesn't it?
Been very interesting, though. I wouldn't change it.
Okay, and sitting with us...
Speaking of change...
...is Charlie Precourt.
Astronaut.
Astronaut.
Yeah.
Space.
Mm-hmm.
The final frontier.
Yeah. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
We're good. What are you up to these days?
Lots of stuff. We've been having a great week here. The efforts to improve safety within the community are continuing to yield a lot of fruit. So we had a Founders Innovation Prize celebration with the winners the other night in the Theater in the Woods. I'm with Northrop Grumman, and we've got a team here displaying with NASA, doing a lot of future launch vehicle stuff.
A lot of amazing things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was over in the NASA tent the other day, and I was like, wow, this is cool.
I was going to say, exactly how much of that can you tell us about?
Well, we are working on a return to the moon and eventually on to Mars program. NASA has reinvigorated that, at Northrop Grumman, we build the launch vehicle components for what they call the Space Launch System. It'll be bigger than Apollo, capable of some 130 tons to orbit.
Did anybody ever sit back and just look at the numbers and go, holy mackerel, this is immense.
Yeah, it is.
How are we going to keep this together?
It is huge. Think of the space shuttle on steroids. It's about 30-40% more capable than the space shuttle was.
Cool. Can you get us like VIP tickets to the first launch?
Absolutely.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute now. First launch, my foot, you know, they should do a scientific study, you know. Space
what,
flight.
Radio personalities in space?
Exactly. How it affects old grumpy radio
people. Is that
the
ticket
people.
You want? You want a ticket on board? Okay.
Just as long as we don't have to kickstart the thing. You
yeah,
know?
Right. Yeah. I'm not doing a Chris Hadfield. I can't play the guitar.
But, you know, it's a great program because if you think back to the early era of the space exploration program, aviation was very close to the space program with the astronauts all having military and even civilian flying backgrounds. And that whole program drew a lot of us into careers in aviation and space. And that's what's happening again. We're seeing a resurgence of interest in engineering and science. And when you have a program like that attracts kids to doing something new or something has been done before, it really, really accelerates things for us. So we're excited about it.
Now, technology has enabled you. I mean, the technology in electronics has just revolutionized in the last 20 years, the miniaturization and everything.
Yes.
So you're able to pack so much more capability into your machines.
Absolutely, yes.
And autonomous and semi-autonomous has gotten so much better.
Yes. And I used to work with John Young from the Apollo program when I was in the astronaut office in Houston when we were developing some of the advancements as you continuously improve the capabilities of the spacecraft when we were working on shuttle. And he used to tell a very funny story about how on Apollo, the computer was all ones and zeros. So they would send up, you know, sitting in there on the limb getting ready to come off the moon. And Houston sends him a set of instructions that are all ones and zeros. And he's typing them in. He says, I sure hope I got these numbers right. I'm about to spit blood if I don't have it right.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's just... icons on a touch screen.
Yeah, they're going to cut to the control room, and there's everybody on their phone with their rocket app. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I'm kind of curious. What is NASA expecting to find in the return to the moon?
Well, so there's so many reasons why we should explore space. And if you are into scientific discovery, all disciplines of science engage in what we learn in doing so. So if you think about the ultimate is, can we find life elsewhere? I always talk to kids about when I was their age, my parents had bought me a set of science encyclopedias. Nobody uses encyclopedias anymore, but a science encyclopedia is a much thinner book because it's only about science, not all encyclopedia information. And in there was a quote that said, at the time, we believe there are planets outside our solar system. We just haven't seen any yet. Today, you could write that and say, we believe there's life on other bodies in the sky. We just haven't seen it yet. So if you take that as the ultimate scientific discovery, today we believe, as an example, the moon of Jupiter called Europa is a oceanic moon. It has an ice crust on it.
A water ice crust.
And right. Underneath that surface is an incredible huge ocean in which may be other forms of life. And so one of the missions of this new Space Launch System rocket, in addition to taking crews back to the surface of the moon and then on to Mars, would be to take a probe, put it on the surface of Europa, bore through the ice, and then, you know, deploy a small seafaring submarine into the sub-ice waters there and see what we can learn.
Can you
imagine being alive on the day that the headlines say we've discovered other life in our universe?
That will be something.
And every day we learn something new. Mars, the latest news is we think we've found a lake-like structure with water accumulated on the surface. On Mars.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The surface of Mars has actually got quite a bit of carbon dioxide ice and water ice, all of the elements that you would expect to go along with organic materials that form life, right? So, but then you can go much deeper. You can go into what can we do with a base station on the moon that is much like the base station in Antarctica, at McMurdo Station in Antarctica, where we do lots of research continuously. So during Apollo, we made the effort to get there and get back and have a huge technological accomplishment. What can we do now that we know so much more? The hazards of living in space for humans over a long period of time are extreme because you suffer, you know, degradation in health from radiation and loss of bone mass and muscle from lack of gravity. But once we have learned to tackle that with the research we did on space station, now we can deploy people to be based semi-permanently and do research that's much more meaningful. On Mars, all that we've learned with the robotic rovers on the surface in the last several decades, really, 20, 30 years, can be accomplished with humans at 100 to 1,000 times the speed, because humans are so much more adaptable to changes that are observed in real time instead of taking the time to reprogram a robot that, you know, takes a lot of time to remissionize for what they want.
Humans are inherently more sensory.
Yes, exactly. So the complementary nature of doing advanced exploration with robotics followed up by the human right there to go deeper, we're going to learn so much.
Well, I also understand that they also talk about moon base being a base, like you said, for Mars mission.
Right.
Because the lower gravitational requires less of a rocket to get out of orbit into Mars.
The way you do different concepts for mission planning is intriguing. So one of the things we want to do here in the near term, if you think about establishing an objective for a crew on Mars in the mid to late 2030s as being feasible, and you know the timelines suggest that it is, what do you do between now and then to be ready? And so you think about this like we would do a flight test in home built. You do the build up the first flights just around the pattern, and then you stay within gliding distance, you come back, and then you go further and further and further. Same concept here, right? We put crew in an orbiting platform around the moon from which we can deploy to the surface of the moon and back. And then over time, you build up this infrastructure in this gateway around the moon that has the capability to go to other places, like a probe to the moon of Jupiter, onto the moons of Mars, where the moons of Mars are interesting because the gravity there is very low, so the fuel required to get to them and back is much less. And then eventually you commit to going to the surface of Mars and so forth. So,
the question I have is, when NASA returns to the moon, are they going to go and investigate any of the old Apollo landing sites?
You know, I imagine that will happen. I haven't discussed that with any of the scientific folks there. I don't imagine it'll have huge scientific priority in the beginning, but I imagine over time it will.
It's been the perfect materials lab.
Yes.
You can see those years of space exposure have done to the vehicles.
That is true. And there you're kind of getting into other reasons to do this kind of exploration, right?
Yeah.
What do we learn from those exposures for materials that speak to what we can do in the future?
Now, I don't know a whole lot about the SLS system.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be more reusable than Apollo? I mean, Apollo, they said like 1/10 of the total mass returned to Earth.
Yeah, so reusability is a recent phenomenon, largely due to what some of the low Earth orbit rockets are doing with SpaceX and even Blue Origin and others. And it is kind of a holy grail. What we don't know yet is it financially more viable than the expendable? And it does depend on the scale of the rocket. The bigger you get, the more difficult it is to bring the bigger pieces back. So the SLS is based on an evolution of shuttle heritage, which was largely reusable. The only thing that didn't get reused on shuttle was the middle tank. Mm-hmm. The boosters came back, the shuttle came back with its engines, and all of that was reused, but the fuel tank in the middle was too big and moving too fast in low, you know, almost a low Earth orbit, so it disintegrated. We weren't making any financial advancements by having all that be reusable, because between flights it had to be refurbished so much. So the SLS is not currently on a path to reusability because it's so large, and the expendable version right now appears to be more financially viable. So that's another area of endeavor that we'll have to go prove out over time, is does the reusability actually pay off? So we don't know that yet. It's a little too early to really have, you know, the data to prove
that. Right. And I guess if you're not designing with reusability in mind, you don't have to build it as robust. You can make
Yeah, there are trades
off.
There. That's exactly right. There are trades there. We actually, so here's another really interesting tidbit, is if you take an aircraft and compare it to a launch vehicle, people think about them in terms of aircraft, but an aircraft can carry its own weight in fuel and passengers. A rocket, because it's trying to go so fast, is mostly fuel, and usually only 5 to 10% is payload. That's a very small amount. You don't make it to space if you don't use a design like that.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. It's always, we could talk for another 6 or 7 days.
Easily.
But it's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah, it's good to come share this program here with the folks, because we're bringing the next generation into the space program here.
All right. I want to thank you again, Charlie Precourt. Let me get that right.
Thanks, guys.
This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio in Space.